On Sunday, December 23rd at 11 p.m., Suge and My Bowl starts its New York Winter Jazz Fest coverage with drummer, composer, and educator Billy Hart. Billy Hart's quartet will be part of the 2019 New York Winter Jazz Festival in January. Join us as we prepare. That's Sunday, December 23rd at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar My Bowl's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is composer, drummer, educator, Jabali Billy Hart. The Billy Hart Quartet will be part of the Winter Jazz Festival in January, so we're in preparation for that event. We'll be having a conversation with Jabali Billy Hart. We're going to open up the program with some holiday music from our recent ancestor, Nancy Wilson. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I want some sugar.
Thank you. Shepherds, why this jubilee? Why your joyous strains prolong? What the gladsome tidings be which inspire your heavenly song? Gloria, Gloria, in excelsis Deo. Excelsis Deo, Gloria,
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with...
Billy Hart.
Billy Hart, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. First question, why drums?
Well, I tried a few things. I had my grandmother and grandfather on my father's side were musicians. So at a certain time, I guess in junior high school, I decided to give it a try because we had classes in school. That shows you what was happening in those days before hip-hop, which I think was caused by the system taking music out of the school.
I agree.
So I tried out as a vocalist at first.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had all the right moves. You know, I could hold my arms up and all that. But, you know, I couldn't sing in tune.
Oh, I see.
I think I tried drums next, and it kind of worked.
Another thing that lead vocalists had in their favor was it attracted the attention. It attracted girls. So is that...
Well, I heard you the first time.
So was there a similar benefit in becoming a drummer?
Well, some people say so. No, I don't think it sort of worked that well for me. But there are a lot of guys that sort of think that's one of the benefits.
I read somewhere that your ability... Now, there are mixed feelings about using the word, but ability to cross over, to not, in my usage of it, to not be stuck in one style, is what helped you essentially find work as a drummer.
Well, there's a certain realization about crossover. First of all, this improvised classical music, I think, comes from the fact that this is the one country that has many cultures. In other words, if you're in France, most of the people are French. If you're in Italy, most of the people are Italian. If you're in Germany, most of the people are German.
Right.
But over here, we've got all these different cultures in one place. So the one thing that they do have in common in this business is the fact that the highest form of art is business. So every time there's some kind of new cultural realization, somebody finds a way to make money out of it. So if that's not your culture at the time, then I guess you cross over. That crossing over is a business phenomena, not necessarily a music phenomena.
Right.
Of course, it works if the only people that hear the music are like 5 years old and never heard anything else. So it seems new and exotic, I guess. And then I guess if it makes enough money, you'll remember it fondly when you get to be 30 or 40, and you think, oh, well, that was something that worked. Now I'm 70, so I've seen that happen enough times to imitate it. For calling it a musician, a crossover, yeah, I mean, I know what it means, but I think there's basically American music and Japanese music and African music and some kind of combination of all of it.
As you were saying, though, with regard to being in this country, with many cultures being in this country, I guess it can all be referred to as American music.
That's what I say. When I have to go through different countries, you know, when you go through customs, say, what do you do or what are you doing? I say, well, I'm a musician. They say, well, what kind of music? And I'll say, American music.
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, I don't mean that. I mean, is it country or rock or what? I say, man, that's not music. That's a marketing term. That's not a description of music. So, of course, that takes more time than it had to. Now I have to discuss it with them, you know, until they get tired. You know, they say, oh, okay, well, you can go, you know.
I would also like you to talk about the type of crossover that you did, because I understand because of your growing up in Washington, D.C., that exposed you to various opportunities to play that helped
right,
you
that's
play
true.
More
that's
music.
True.
Could you tell us about that?
Well, I grew up at a time when there was a new contemporary pop music. It had sort of left the rhythm and blues thing of the late 30s, early 40s. And because of the Afro-Caribbean awareness that the beboppers brought in, they sort of changed the rhythm of rhythm and blues to something that they ended up calling it rock and roll. So I sort of grew up in that era. And I also grew up in an area that was between the North and the South. So a lot of the people that were innovators of this style were Afro-Americans. So they didn't have the kind of backing that the other cultural people had. So a lot of times these guys would come up from the South with no band of their own. So I was at the age where I sort of was familiar with that style of playing. So I got a chance to play with a few of those kind of people. Where are you from?
I'm from New York. I was born in Harlem.
Okay. Ultimately, these guys were headed to the Apollo.
Right.
But there was another theater in Washington, D.C. that architecturally was very similar to the Apollo. It was called the Howard
Yes.
Theater. So at one point, I was actually the house drummer at the theater.
I read that. That had to be interesting. You played with a lot of people who came to town, yes?
Yes, I did. Like a lot of people, people know their names, but they don't seem to know names like Sonny Fortune or Billy Harper. People who actually, they had more of my attention than these other people I was playing with. People always ask me about these other people that everybody knows, and they never ask me about these guys that I consider really, really great musicians.
I think people know who Sonny Fortune was and who Billy Harper is now.
Well, they should.
Yes.
But I don't get the same exhilaration when I say some of these other names. So I try not to mention those other names. So they say, well, you played with him? And yeah, I played with him, but so did 1,000 other people who people don't know played with him.
Tell us about some of the people we don't know.
Eddie Henderson.
Oh, yeah.
Sonny Fortune, Billy Harper, George Cable, Cedar Walton, Tommy Flanagan.
Oh, my goodness. We ought to know those names. Come on now.
that's what I say.
Actually,
Barry Harris.
Yes. You're saying that
they didn't make a movie about him.
Oh, that's the determinant right there. If they haven't made a movie about him, then not important.
Well, it would be okay if they gave him the same money that his talent deserves.
Right. Now, see, you're talking about something very important.
American.
Yes. Yes. Which explains why a lot of our talented musicians have to go abroad to get what
they're
worth.
Used to.
Oh, no. Don't tell me they're treating them badly abroad as well.
Well, what I would think could have happened is when this pop style of the new contemporary pop style of music took hold in the instrumental versions, they sent the innovative musicians to Europe while they hired all of the fusion musicians in this country. So we ended up teaching a lot of the Europeans how to play. So now we have to go over there and compete for attention in their countries, which we should have had to do all the time. A lot of the people did. You know,
right.
Anthony Braxton taught
right.
them.
Right.
The Art Ensemble of Chicago taught them.
Right.
Richard Muhall Abrams
right.
taught them. Max Roach taught them.
Right. I read there's a lineage that you mentioned from when you were playing with somebody you went to school with. And then that person led you to working with Jimmy Smith, I think.
Right.
Could you explain that?
Well, you sort of said it pretty clearly. There were two or three guys that I went to high school with that were a couple of years older than me. One of them just died, Reuben Brown. But they were just talented Afro-American improvising musicians at a very early age. And when Reuben graduated, within a week, he was in Florida with Lou Donaldson. When Quentin Warren graduated, within days, he was with Jimmy Smith. And when Butch Warren graduated, within weeks, he was with the trumpet player. You know, one of the guys that took Clifford Brown's place with Max Roach, but he also played in one of Art Blakey's first bands, too. This guy played with Charlie Parker, too, from Texas. Butch Warren went with him, and he stayed with him a while. It was a good band, too. Charles Davis played baritone.
Oh,
and
wow.
Steve Kuhn played piano. Kenny Dorham. So they all came back home, except for Quentin. When they came back home, we some kind of way ended up together, because by this time I had graduated from high school, and we ended up playing 9 months in a club in Washington, D.C. with Roger Buckhill.
And Roger Buckhill played
tenor saxophone.
Okay. For us who don't know Roger Buckhill, this is one of those names that we should know, right?
Well, he never really traveled. He worked in the post office.
Oh, okay. But we should still know the name because they made music in D.C.
Yes, yes. And he finally recorded. I got him interested in making a record in New York. He came up to New York, and at that time I was playing a lot with Buster Williams and Kenny Barron. And so we made a couple of records with Buck that were pretty successful. getting a chance to play with it was a great lesson. Meanwhile, playing with Buck actually gave me my first so-called jazz record because he lived across the hall from my grandmother. I went to visit my grandmother one day when I was, I guess, about 16 or 17 years old, and she wasn't there. So I ended up in Buck's house because his wife invited me into their house. So when Buck came in, he saw me with some drumsticks in my pocket, and he said, "So you're a drummer?" I said, "Yeah." And he gave me these two records. I think they were 78 records, I guess, because he was getting a, what did you call them in those days, a hi-fi set.
Yes.
One speaker and a turntable and an amplifier. And those were 33 records.
So. Right. 33 and a third.
So I got a 78, and they were both Charlie Parker.
Oh.
Charlie Parker with strings.
Oh, wow.
And a quartet. For some reason, maybe because of my relationship with my grandparents, I really loved the music. I really got hooked immediately. So I started looking around for the music and found out that they had radio programs with it. And the radio programs, I found out that they had live performances.
Oh.
So once I saw there were live performances, I tried to go and play. But it seemed like a joke to most people that I would come in these clubs by myself.
Because you were a child, or?
Yeah, because first of all, nobody knew me. And the second was that they didn't want anybody that couldn't play. So
yeah.
I called Buck up again, and he had played in the afternoons on the weekends. So he told me I could come and play with him. And when I got a chance to play with him, I found out why the other guys didn't want to play with me, because I didn't do too well.
Oh.
But there was a lady playing the piano who was concerned, and she came over to me and said, "You know, it's not all your fault. You know, it takes three of us to make a rhythm section." And that lady transformed herself into being Shirley Horn.
Yeah.
Hear my voice where you are. Take a train, steal a car, hop a freight, grab a star, come back to me. Catch a plane, catch a breeze, on your hands, on your knees, swim or fly, only please come back to me. Have you gone to the moon? Or a corner saloon, or to rack and to ruin, I don't care, this is where you should be. From the hills, from the shore, ride the wind to my door, turn the highway to dust, break the law if you must, only please just come back to me.
I started playing with her as much as possible.
Oh, wow.
But she had a regular drummer.
Right.
So some years later, I began to play with her. But, of course, that was way before I started recording with her. Because other people liked her, too, you know, like Miles Davis and,
right.
and people like that. So finally, she became famous. She became popular.
She became even more popular toward the latter years of her life.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Because I actually played with her and traveled with her before she kind of semi-retired. So when I got to be of some popularity myself, I went to the record company and asked them to record her, and they did, and from that she became really famous.
Oh, wow. So you're the one who
Well, she used to say that anyway.
Oh, wow.
She was really the one. She was Shirley Horn.
While we're talking about Shirley Horn, I noticed that your playing with Shirley Horn was probably the most visible, the longest relationship you've had working with a vocalist. Is that the case?
Yeah, that was the longest relationship, but it wasn't the only relationship.
No. How is it for you? Well, we'll start with Shirley Horn as a vocalist. How is it working with Shirley Horn and then drumming with vocalists in general?
Well, she was a, I almost want to say she is an incredible musician and pianist. She was an instrumentalist, but there have been other people who were vocalists that were great musicians, like Sarah Vaughan and Harmon McRae.
Right.
Some people are just gifted, and she was that. And not only was she gifted, she was a huge influence on me. I learned a lot playing with her. I learned music with her. She could play the piano sort of like Red Garland or Wynton Kelly or Bill Evans. And there's a vocabulary to this music that starts before Louis Armstrong that still goes on to this moment. And she taught me some of that vocabulary just because she knew it. And I played with her long enough to pick it up. And I didn't really know how much of it was as valuable as it was until I moved to New York and realized I was immediately assisted by other drummers like Billy Higgins and Mickey Roker and a couple of guys my age like Billy Cobham. So I immediately got a chance to play around the city, Manhattan, with these guys. And so that meant I immediately got a chance to work with Art Farmer and Sonny Rollins. And what's this other guy that was just in town? Oh, Farrell.
Farrell Saunders, yes. You mentioned the vocabulary. Is that part of the vocabulary to know how to work with vocalists?
Yes, of course. The original instrument is the heart. So you can look at it like it's the original drum, but it's just the original instrument in the first place. And it can show by the physicality of it, the human emotion. So from that, people make sounds when they're happy and make sounds when they're unhappy. And I think that from that becomes song. And some people communicate that stronger than others. There were certain people that never studied voice lessons like Billie Holiday who still communicated these emotions on such a high level.
Right.
Shirley taught me that kind of stuff.
Was there a moment as a drummer that you had to learn how to temper what you were doing? Did you ever get heavy-handed while you were working with vocalists and you had to be tempered a little?
That kind of question sounds like a contemporary vocalist.
Meaning?
Meaning that somebody would have to tell me what to do.
Okay.
No, if you like it enough, you'll want to do it correctly.
Right.
And if nobody told you, you'd ask them. Not a thing where you join the army.
I got you. So you asked, huh?
No, I would have, but she never told me anything.
Oh, you just picked it up.
I love the way she sang.
Mm.
I still love the way she sang. It's funny that she come up now. I was in a car with another young drummer. And he had her record on the radio.
Which one?
You Won't Forget Me.
Yes!
But the one that I brought her back was called A Lazy Afternoon. So I'm pleased with that one, too.
Take a little time to smile. Let a little thing worthwhile. When the moon comes up and the sun goes down, take a little time to smile. If you think you have a game, you can find it everywhere. They will vanish too, like the others do. Take a little time to smile. Smiles were meant to give away. Give 100 every day. If you know what good they do, why
want to live in style. When the moon comes up and the sun goes down, take a little time to smile. Smiles were meant to give away at least 100 every day. If you know what good they do, why not try to give a few? Try it for a little while. If you want to live in style, when the moon comes up and the sun comes down, take a little time to smile. In the morning, in the evening, in the meantime, in between time, smile. Take a little time to smile. In a hurry, not to worry, in the meantime, in between time, smile. Smiles were meant to give away at least 100 every day. If you know what good they do, try to give a few. Try for a little while. If you want to live in style, when the moon comes up and the sun comes down, just relax, love is still around. So smile, take a little time to smile.
Well, she hung around Billie Holiday.
Oh, really?
Some. And I think she was very close with Carmen McRae, too. And Miles loved her also.
Yes.
And Miles is sort of like a singer to me. And Coltrane supposedly said if he could have been a vocalist, he wouldn't have played the saxophone. I hear that in his playing. I've always heard that in his playing from the first time that I heard him.
Even toward the latter years he was singing.
In particular, the latter years. And a lot of people look at the academics of what he was doing, and they missed the lyricism of it. On his very last record that was released right after his death is incredibly lyrical. I mean, you could just hear him singing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he grew up in the Afro-American church,
yes.
So he had that kind of projection also. So if you didn't recognize it from the pop culture, you would have recognized it from the gospel singing that he did. And that's what made him popular. People don't think of him as popular, but he was extremely popular. And he made hit records. Blue Train is a hit record. My Favorite Things is a hit record. A Love Supreme is a hit record.
Right.
And it's basically from his ability to sing.
And, you know, even if you don't look at him as a hit maker, there are movements that formed as a result of being inspired by his music.
I'm saying the same thing with hip-hop. We wouldn't have had rap or hip-hop if they'd kept the musical instruments in the public schools. They took them out of the schools.
And so people made their music. They had to make something to express themselves.
So that just shows you that you didn't necessarily need the business people to do that.
Right.
You know, I heard these guys and I liked them. And nobody had to tell me to like John Coltrane because a lot of people didn't necessarily like him at first.
Right.
But I liked him the very first time I heard him.
Ding 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 ding. Ora Alice, o bem que lhe disse, amar é tolice, é bobagem, é ilusão. Eu prefiro viver tão sozinho ao som do lamento do meu violão. Ora Alice, o bem que lhe disse, olha essa embrulhada em que vou me meter. Agora, amor, Doralice, meu bem, como é que nós vamos fazer? Doralice, o bem que lhe disse, amar é tolice, é bobagem, é ilusão. Eu prefiro viver tão sozinho ao som do lamento do meu violão. Doralice, o bem que lhe disse, olha essa embrulhada em que vou me meter. Agora, amor, Doralice, meu bem, como é que nós vamos fazer? Um belo dia você me surgiu, Eu quis fugir, mas você insistiu. Alguma coisa bem que andava me avisando. Até parece que eu estava adivinhando. Bem que não queria me casar contigo. Bem que não queria enfrentar este perigo. Doralice, agora você tem que me dizer como é que nós vamos fazer. Bobagem, ilusão. Eu prefiro viver tão sozinho ao som do lamento do meu violão. Doralice, eu bem que lhe disse, olha-se embrulhado em que vou me meter. Agora, amor, Doralice, meu bem, como é que nós vamos fazer? Um belo dia você me surgiu. Eu quis fugir, mas você insistiu. Alguma coisa bem que andava me avisando. Até parece que eu estava adivinhando. Bem que não queria me casar contigo. Bem que não queria enfrentar este perigo. Doralice, agora você tem que me dizer como é que nós vamos fazer. Paiarará, iarará, papá, paiarará, pá.
Speaking of the business, and back to that whole crossover thing, you talk about how you wound up playing bossa nova.
I was incredibly lucky, very fortunate, that there was a guitarist in Washington named Charlie Burr who had learned his interest in the European classical guitar was from a guy that played with another guitar player named Bill Harris, who played with a rhythm and blues group. What's the name of that group? One Mint Jewel was the cause of it all.
Oh.
The Clovers. So he lived in Washington, D.C. In some kind of way, he turned Charlie Burr on to European classical music. Andre Segovia and Julian Bream and people like that. And this guy became incredibly popular and ended up owning his own nightclub. So somehow he ended up going to Brazil, and he had a bassist named Keita Betts who went out and heard the music and brought some records back. And he said it took Charlie Burr 6 months to even listen to the records. He didn't go out to hear the music, I guess because he was more concerned about his own performances. So he started playing the music, and he came by this place where I had been playing, but Stan Getz was playing there at the time. And I just happened to be standing there when he told Stan Getz about the music. And Stan recorded it, and the rest is history.
Right.
He raised the Brazilian economy.
Right.
Yeah, he did. He said it. That's a fact. So when these guys would come in from Brazil to play at Carnegie Hall or Lincoln Center or whatever, they would stop by Charlie Burr's club, I guess in gratitude. And so at that point, I got a chance to play with some of those guys. That's something that, as lucky as I had been before, this was extremely fortunate because it starts... That style of playing added to the popular music of the day and helped the evolution of the rhythms that we play today. Got a chance to play with João Gilberto and Tom Jobim and Luiz Bonfá.
Luiz Bonfá.
And what was up? bowl of setay. I was just very, very fortunate that I got a chance to play with these guys.
Is that how you also wound up playing with Stan Getz, because you had played with those guys?
It didn't hurt, but okay. I don't think he knew me like that. I mean, I think he found out quick enough when I finally did get a chance to play with him, because at a certain point, Joao was actually staying at his house while I was in the band. And so we got a chance to play together with Stan. Oh, I think there's some records out.
How was it working with Stan Getz?
Interesting.
Meeting.
No, he was a great musician. And he knew the vocabulary.
Okay.
He had played with the trombone player that played with Louis Armstrong.
Jack Teagarden.
Stan had played with him when he was a teenager. Now you're going directly to Louis Armstrong or Freddie Keppard or Buddy Bolden, or as the case may be. Who are those original jazz musicians? He actually did say some things to me. He was that kind of guy. A lot of times, good leaders are great students. So I guess since he had to learn it, he was pretty good at trying to show me how to do it. So he was very helpful. He definitely showed me some different ways of doing things that I had already started doing. That made him interesting.
Oh, okay. That is very, I guess, generous as well of him.
Yeah, generous is one of the words you could use, because I really felt he needed it to be played a certain way so that he could continue. I was a lot younger than he was, so to bring me up to where he was hearing the music, you know, he'd say, well, look, why don't you do this? Anyway, it was a great lesson, I'll tell you that.
Excellent.
Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar and My Bowl's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is drummer, composer, and band leader and educator, Billy Hart. What you're listening to right now is a song from the Herbie Hancock Sextet, Ostinato Sight for Angela. I may be missing some members in this band, but we have M1 Dishi, Herbie Hancock, electric piano, piano, mellotron, percussion, Ngonga, Eddie Henderson on trumpet, flugelhorn and percussion, Muele, Benny Maupin on soprano saxophone, bass clarinet, piccolo flute, alto flute, percussion, Pepe Mtoto, Julian Priester is on tenor, trombone, alto trombone, bass trombone, percussion, Patrick Gleason on Moog synthesizer, Imke Zazi, Buster Williams on electric and acoustic bass and percussion, Jabali Billy Hart on drums and percussion. Before that, we heard Doralis from Stan Getz and Joao Gilberto from Getz Gilberto 76, It's actually a reissue on Resonance Records, originally recorded in 1976. This is a 2016 release. Before that, we heard from Shirley Horn, Take a Little Time to Smile from A Lazy Afternoon, a 1979 Steeplechase Records release. Shirley Horn on piano, vocals, Jabali Billy Hart on drums, and Buster Williams on bass. Before that, we heard another selection from Shirley Horn from You Won't Forget Me. This is Come Back to Me. This is a 1991 Verve Records release. Shirley Horn on vocals and piano, Jabali Billy Hart on drums, and Buster Williams on bass. Before that, we heard Funk Dumpling from the Buck Hill Quartet, from the 1995 Steeplechase Records release, Scope. Buck Hill on alto saxophone, Jabali Billy Hart on drums, Kenny Barron on piano, and Buster Williams on bass. Before that, we heard Yard, a Billy Hart composition from the Billy Hart Quartet. One is the Other, 2014 ECM Records release, Jabali Billy Hart on drums, Ethan Iverson on piano, Mark Turner tenor saxophone, and Ben Street on double bass. And before that, we heard from our recent ancestor, Nancy Wilson, with some holiday music. Angels We Have Heard on High from Nancy Wilson Christmas, a 2001 Manchester Craftsman Guild release. Nancy Wilson vocals, Jay Ashby trombone, Lew Matthews on piano, John B. Williams on bass, and Roy McCurdy on drums. And of course, we opened our program with our theme from Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl. This is from a compilation, The Very Best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967-1972. Originally recorded in 1967, this is a 1998 RCA BMG compilation. Stay tuned for our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer Hank Williams. More information about the Winter Jazz Festival will be provided. And more from Jabali Billy Hart, right here on Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for December 23rd. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar My Bowl guests so you can see them live. And this week's guest is drummer Billy Hart. You can see him as part of the 2019 Winter Jazz Fest at Les Poissons Rouges on January 12th, and he'll be at Dizzy's Club with the Cookers in the last week of January. We'll have more Winter Jazz Fest details coming at the bottom of the segment, but before that, we have more listings for you this week. And we start with pianist Barry Harris, who leads a trio at Dizzy's Club on December 24th. Jake McGinsky's documentary film, Milford Graves' Full Mantis, is showing at Time and Space Limited in Hudson, New York through January 1st. Pianist David Vireas is at the Village Vanguard with Chris Potter from December 25th through the 31st. Pianist Harold Mayburn leads a quartet at Smoke to celebrate the release of his Iron Man album from the 27th through January 2nd. Bassist Alex Blake is at Harlem's Greater Calvary Baptist Church with Jay Rodriguez for a lunchtime set as part of the Harlem Jazzback series on the 28th. Trombonist and seashellist Steve Torrey is at Jazz Forum Arts in Tarrytown, New York on the 28th and 29th. pianist Mark Carey's Harlem Session Series continues with a move to late Friday night sets at Smoke on December 28th and January 4th. Guitarist Nels Klein is at Sony Hall in Manhattan on the 29th. Vocalist Kurt Elling is at Birdland on January 2nd. Looking a little further ahead, tubist Joe Daly is at Terra Blues with Hazmat Modine on January 5th and 19th. Vocalist Catherine Russell is at City Winery on the 7th and the Mohonk Mountain House in New Paltz, New York for Jazz on the Mountain from the 12th through the 14th. Drummer Andrew Surreal is at the Zurcher Gallery for a solo performance on the 9th. Finally, the 2019 Winter Jazz Fest blows back into town from January 4th through 12th at various venues in downtown Manhattan, with marathon nights of music on the 5th, 11th, and 12th, and individual events and talks on other nights. We'll have more details in the next show, and a full preview's coming on our blog, but for right now, we'll tell you about the mini-marathon night on January 5th, which has the Zigzag Power Trio with Melvin Gibbs and Will Calhoun at the bitter end. Bassist Richard Bona is going to be at Le Poisson Rouge. Tia Fuller is going to be at Zinc Bar. And Nels Klein will be at New Blue, among many other acts on that night. And you can see the full schedule at the Winter Jazz Fest's website. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link to the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news. And Sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website, and if you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too, where we'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. If you really like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. The support WBAI link on the Sugar in My Bowl website has details, and we're grateful for any help you can give the station. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our bi-weekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on air on Sunday, January 6th. And speaking of that, we have a schedule change coming, and we'll be moving to a weekly Tuesday night schedule at 10 p.m. starting on January 8th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
Hello, this is Hugh Masekela in New York. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. Don't lose your mind. Don't move that dial. Don't groove to anything else.
End up playing with Herbie Hancock. Might as well get that out of the way.
Oh, so you know about that too. So, okay. Well, there's two answers to that question. Remember I told you about this bass player I went to high school with named Butch Warren?
Yes.
Well, he came back home and we played with Reuben Brown and Buck Hill, but then Butch moved back to New York and he became sort of a Blue Note Records side man. And he was playing with a trumpet player named Donald Byrd. He had a band with Pepper Adams and Duke Pierce, but some kind of way Duke left the band for some reason while they were in Chicago. And somebody recommended Herbie. So Herbie actually moved to New York and lived with Donald Byrd for a while. So I heard a record that he made with Butch playing bass and Billy Higgins playing drums. And when I heard the record, I probably listened to the record because Butch was on it. But when I heard the record, I fell in love with Herbie immediately. Mm. You know, same like when I first heard Coltrane for the first time. So I knew exactly who he was before a lot of other people did. So when I finally moved to New York, playing with vocalists, I had also played with Betty Carter. That's where I met Buster Williams on Betty Carter's gig in Detroit. So we became close, good friends. I admired him. So when Herbie needed a drummer, Buster recommended me, although I had already played with him on a Joe Zawinul record. So he already knew who I was. I mean, he didn't just take Buster's word totally. But anyway, Buster recommended me for his band, and he gave me a try, and it kind of worked out. Definitely worked out for me, because that was one of the most important lessons I'd had since Shirley Horn, because they were both piano players. And I really felt that Herbie had investigated some of Shirley's accompanying expertise. I saw a similarity in him, in the both of them. I mean, I don't know why he waited so long to make a record where he accompanied singers on his own record, but he certainly won a Grammy when he did it.
That is true, River, that
yeah,
release.
Right, but I've always felt that way. His ability to accompany is a big part of his genius. And he is a genius.
But you know, I spoke to Eddie Henderson about being with the band, what is commonly known as M1Dishi, but the group never actually called themselves that, I think.
That's
it was actually
true.
The Sextet. It was Herbie Hancock's Sextet or something.
Yeah, we had a number that we had used, 429.
Oh, what does that mean?
Well, the four members of the group, although one of them was the sound man, their birthdays were on the 29th of the month. All the elements are air, earth, water, and fire.
Interesting. God, I never heard that before. That's a good one.
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
Thank you for sharing it.
That implied some kind of a spiritual connection that we all had that made us all enjoy not only being around each other, but being around Herbie in particular. We all seem to have, you know, affected by his genius, I think.
When I'm talking to folks from this ensemble, you're one of the fewer people who actually really, truly embraced the name that you got from Mtume, the Swahili name, Jabali.
Yeah, right.
Is there a reason why you're still using it?
Well, when we talk to each other, we still refer to each other by the name, including M1DG.
Oh, okay.
I've never seen him when he didn't call me Jabali, and he's never seen me when I didn't call him M1DG.
Oh, okay. What was your takeaway from being involved in that ensemble?
Well, it's the first time I'd been in a band where everybody was around the same age, which is sort of unlike some of the guys are today, because you have music in schools now, so a lot of times a lot of these guys meet each other in classes.
Right.
Well, that wasn't that way when I first came on the scene. So the first time I got a chance to really feel that was in Herbie's band. It was another great gift for me, and I still appreciate that to this very moment.
You're also involved in a super band of sorts right now, the Cookers, along with your buddy Eddie Henderson.
Yeah.
Thank you.
did you get the call to join that band?
I'm trying to think. We've been in that band quite a while now.
Right.
Well, I'd already not only performed with Billy Harper, but made a couple of his records. And George Cables, I'd known George for years also. And Cecil McBee had already made a couple of his records. I guess the guy that sort of leads the band and books it is a guy named David Weiss.
Right.
Now, think about it. I had known him a few years, too. So I'm sure he's the one that called me. But I don't know what caused him to do that. But certainly I was very familiar with not only the concept of the band, but the members already.
Thank you.
So tell me about the Billy Hart Quartet, which will be featured at the Winter Jazz Festival in January.
Yep, I like that band too. Yeah, now it's to the point where I'm the older guy in the band now. And so these guys are some of the brightest young musicians that I know of today. And I'm inspired by them, actually.
Could you tell me how you decided each member would be in the quartet?
Well, I was called by Ethan Iverson to play with his trio.
It became
the Bad Plus. But he wanted to do some crossover stuff. Of course, I didn't have any problems doing that with Herbie. But for some reason, I wasn't ready to do that with Ethan at the time. So he did come up with quite an interesting concept with Reed Anderson and the drummer Dave King. But we continued to play together anyway, and some kind of way, the members of the band decided somehow that they wanted me to be the leader of the band.
Oh, okay.
And it's basically the same now, except that Mark Turner, who is uniquely individual in his playing, and he's quite an influence on a lot of the younger saxophone players today.
He's on tenor.
Yes, he is. I don't know if he's quite the influence that Coltrane was, but he's approaching that, and because of that, his records are inspirational for a lot of people, including myself. And then Ethan, of course, has got his own unique style, and Ben Street the same. I think as a band, we sort of have somewhat of a unique style, a unique way of playing, and I'm pleased with it. I'm very pleased with it.
On Saturday, January 12th, the Billy Hart Quartet will be at Le Poisson Rouge at 158 Bleecker Street for the 9 p.m. set on the ECM Records stage. That's what they're calling it. That's where all the ECM recording artists are going to be. Vijay Iyer and Craig Taborn have a duet earlier in the evening. And Matthias
Eek. That's going to be exciting.
Yes. So you've recorded two releases together, right? The quartet?
Yes. Yes. And one before that wasn't on ECM, which is a great record too, I thought. High Note.
mentioned playing with Farrell. Was that like playing with Coltrane?
Well, that was the point. That was an incredible lesson, too, because the thing about any classical music of any culture, which is interesting, a lot of people say classical music, and they only consider the European
classical.
The European classical,
right.
As if there were no other cultures on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So any classical music of any culture, as far as I'm concerned, starts with folk music first. Mm-hmm. It's an evolution of the song and dance. The problem with that is, of course, if you get too far away from the song and dance, you begin to lose the sort of sensual approach that the song and dance has naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But there are ways to keep it in your performance, even though it's considered evolutionary or advanced, if you want to use that word. But it really isn't. Music is beautiful anyway. So Coltrane had gotten to a point, in my estimation, where he wanted to try different directions at once.
Right.
You know?
Right.
because he had studied with Thelonious Monk, and gotten certain advanced harmonic lessons from him. Not that he didn't get them from Miles also, but it was something about Monk that had a real basic traditional sound that kept that church kind of sound in his music, although it was advanced. John seemingly wanted to go in a bunch of these different directions. The bebop guys had played a lot of the Afro-Caribbean or Latin music, so it was that concept. Then it was, of course, the tradition that we already had. And then it's sort of advanced modal technique, the sound that came out of that. And it seems like John wanted to explore all of these different directions at once.
Right.
And so he called it that. According to Rashid Ali,
Rashida,
he called it multi-directional music. So Farrell joins the band right about the time that John is experimenting with this kind of multi-directional rhythmic and harmonic playing.
Right.
And so I was so fascinated with John. Of course, I was interested in that direction also. And luckily, again, for me, I was fortunate enough to play with Farrell. The piano player in his band, who I had met through Gary Bart, recommended me for the band, and Farrell allowed it.
Excellent. You know, I noticed that you were on, it's like it was only played that once, it seemed, that recording, Black Unity. Do you remember what that was like playing?
Well, I'd already made Karma.
Yes.
You know, the creator has a master plan.
Right.
That was right during the period where I was learning what I consider that kind of vocabulary, which I'm still experimenting with now, probably more with my quartet than I have with any other band. So, yeah, that's what Farrell brought to me.
You're teaching. Now, I understand you're not just teaching in one place. There was a time when you were, I guess, teaching in, I don't know, like three or four places at the same time.
Where are you now?
Well, and what are you teaching?
Music, I guess you could say. So I'm at Oberlin, and that's my main priority. But I also teach at New England Conservatory.
Were you at the New School as well?
I had been at the New School and University of Washington in Seattle.
Wow.
And I've done master classes at the Monk Institute, which I understand now is the Herbie Hancock Institute.
Yes, it is.
And North Texas University, and some master classes in Germany, France, and Belgium.
Wow. Now, you say you're teaching music. What aspect of music are you teaching?
Well, mainly the drum, but I guess since you kind of brought it up, it's just basically discussing the vocabulary, because I think when you discuss stuff in academia, or you're basically studying the history of whatever subject you are. Yeah, I'm one of those people that believes if you know your history, knowing your history well is what allows you to envision, you know, evolving, growing.
Right.
So basically, that's where I discuss the history in relationship to whatever seems to be current. today. Of course, you know, in this country, you go to these institutions to gain employment, it would seem.
This is how you can get a good gig. This is how you can get a good award. This is how you can get notoriety.
So we discussed the vocabulary in regards to that also. So that's a history, almost a history of capitalism or economic. I wouldn't call it that. Well, they have other teachers that do that a lot better. In relationship to that, we, you know, have a vocabulary that you discuss the vocabulary that goes with these various movements. So you actually learn a little about politics, about the Roosevelts. Certainly the president that starts the concept of the United Nations, called the League of Nations then, I guess. Wilson?
Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah. You know, you start talking about United Nations, then you're really almost revealing the concept of not only this country, but the fact that you have all these different relationships towards a peaceful goal, a recognition of each other's cultures. Yes. And I think that's what we've done or tried to do with the music. You certainly can hear it in all the popular musics.
Well, it's definitely necessary in society on the whole because people can be sheltered. And it's better to play with different voices, especially in America. Yeah. There are so many different voices.
Yeah, well, it's the Industrial Revolution to the Technological Revolution certainly has given us this path to evolution or something.
It's given us a path.
Well, you know, nobody's perfect.
Right.
Well, some people are closer than others.
Okay. You know, there's one ensemble I want to ask you about, Quest.
Wow.
Do you want to tell us about that, how it came about and how you became a part of it?
Well, let me see. One of the records I made with Miles Davis had saxophonist Dave Liebman on the record. He was and still is quite impressive as a student of this music. And his very close and dear friend, Richie Bayrak, they've studied together. And I think they came up with something unique. And I was, again, lucky enough, I think Al Foster was the original drummer, but he was sort of still tied to Miles. So I guess my name came up again.
Wow.
And you know, I ended up in the band, and we ended up being one of those groups that spent a lot of time in Europe.
Okay.
I think we ended up being one of the teachers of the European concept of jazz music. The music just keeps growing.
Exactly.
It's not unlike the Beatles or Rolling Stones.
The work that you've done as a composer, how do you feel about compositions, writing, music?
Well, in my case, it's difficult. But it's certainly another way of expressing yourself.
What do you use when you have composed? And why is it difficult? What makes it difficult for you?
Well, when you consider the fact that I'm basically self-taught, I'm still in that stage of self-teaching.
Got it.
So it would be much quicker and much faster if I had, you know, a specific teaching course. On the other hand, I think some of the products of my composition express my viewpoint of music unhindered of certain technical advances. So a lot of my stuff is like you sing in the shower.
So you're not in your head.
Well, I am, but only so much.
I guess I mean in an obsessive kind of way. It's like, I could do that. And then you interfere with where you could have gone.
Right. But that way of doing it, it would be my preference if I could do it. But I think that I've found some unique ways of coming up with, because I like singers and I like singing, and most of my compositions can be sung.
What do you use when you're composing? Some people sit at a piano.
I sit at the piano.
Oh, okay.
It just takes forever.
Okay.
And I sing in the shower. I mean,
right. That's the best place to compose. Do you have like an instrument that, as an example, I asked Freddie Hubbard, was there an instrument that he sort of keyed into while he was playing? And he said the drummer. He can really lock in with a drummer. Is there somebody that you lock in with?
Well, I like the piano.
Okay.
I guess because I lack that kind of experience. But Hub, he had a really advanced harmonic knowledge.
Yes. The project that you did with Bob Gluck, The Infinite Spirit, revisiting the music of the M1DC band. How did you feel about that? Did you enjoy yourself?
Well, let's put it this way. Anything that has anything to do with Herbie, I would enjoy it, you know. But Gluck, you know, he's more interested in Herbie's electronic explorations. And so that's another one of Herbie's geniuses. I mean, I've heard rumors that he wrote one of the introductions to one of the Mac handbooks.
Oh.
And, you know, he studied electronic engineering in college. So it just brings out about that. But talking about my compositions, I made this record with the WDR.
Big band.
Yeah. I'm pleased with the way that turned out. That's a German record, you know.
Right.
It's a German studio band.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of the name of the record.
The broader picture?
The broader picture.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was there a particular selection that you really liked from there?
Well, I like them all.
Okay.
I mean, some have more energy than others.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll find something with more energy to play.
You get a full viewpoint of what I was thinking about, because I was also impressed with Tony Williams' career, not only as an innovative percussionist or jazz drummer, whatever you call it, but his compositional path. He composed a few pieces for chamber orchestra that I felt was done very well. One of the tragedies of his transition is that we didn't get the chance to hear more of that direction. I think he was going to be a major composer of extended works.
By the way, since you mentioned the big band and extended works and working with large ensembles, a lot of musicians who play improvised music, free improvised music, tend to want to have a moment with a big band. Why is that?
Well, it just broadens your palette,
okay.
You know, your colors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Duke Ellington. Yeah, with Duke in particular, you know, what a composer, Ian Strayhorn.
Yes.
You know, the colors you can find harmonically. That leads you into one of the problems I see with contemporary music, with the evolution of music. It's becoming more and more through composed. Like the Europeans, it's going to have less and less improvisation. But it balances itself out. I mean, the music would be very beautiful.
Yeah, but I sort of like improvisation, but then again, I'm a person who comes from the black church.
Well, we all love improvisation.
Yeah.
All the musicians I know would be disappointed if it was all through composed. But you see it going that way.
Yeah.
Wayne Shorter is a pretty good example.
True. Herbie, of course, has done that often.
Yeah.
But as long as there's still room for improvisation, as long as it's not eliminated completely, we have
we're all on the same page with that.
Okay. All right, so we're going to have to wrap up. It's about that time. I've probably kept you so long, and I appreciate the time that you spent with me. Is there anything you want to tell the listeners as we wrap it up?
Well, let me think. Obviously, I'm a fan of contemporary music of any kind, but again, only in the fact that you can relate it to where it came from.
Well, thank you so much, Billy Hart. I really appreciate the time that you spent with us.
Well,
I'm so grateful, and I hope you enjoy a wonderful dinner.
Okay. Well, thank you for considering me. You know.
All right, Mr. Hart. I'll see you in January at the Winter Jazz Festival.
I look forward to it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you so much.
Listening to the closing moments of Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. What you're listening to in the background is Layla Joy from Billy Hart and the WDR Big Band. The Broader Picture is the name of this 2016 NJ Records release. Jabali Billy Hart is on drums, and the conductor and arranger is Christoph Schweitzer. Before that, we heard Prince of Peace from Pharoah Sanders. Izipko Zab, My Gifts. This is a 1973 Strata East Records release. Personnel includes Pharoah Sanders, tenor saxophone, Jabali Billy Hart on drums, Leon Thomas on vocals, Lonnie Liston-Smith on piano, and Cecil McBee on bass. Before that, Song for Baucus, a Billy Hart composition from Billy Hart, Ethan Iverson, Mark Turner, Ben Street. This was before they started working with the Handel Billy Hart Quartet. This is from the 2012 ECM For All Reasons release. Jabali Billy Hart is the composer and drummer. Ethan Iverson on piano, Mark Turner on tenor saxophone, Ben Street on double bass. Before that, we heard Toulouse Redemption, from The Cookers, from their 2016 Smoke Session Records release, The Call of the Wild and Peaceful Heart. Jabali Billy Hart on drums, percussion, Cecil McBee on bass, Billy Harper on tenor saxophone, Donald Harris on alto saxophone, David Weiss on trumpet, Eddie Henderson on trumpet, and George Cables on piano. Before that, we heard the rest of the selection, Ostinato, Site for Angela, after our On the Bandstand segment. Stay tuned, La Nueva Alternativa should be scheduled next. As mentioned during the On the Bandstand segment, Sugar in My Bowl will be changing our time of broadcast to Tuesday evening from 10 to midnight, starting January 8th. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Silver bells all seem to say the rogue cares away. Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, meek and the bold. Ding dong, ding dong, that is their song. With joyful ring, all caroling, one seems to hear words of good cheer from everywhere, filling the air. Oh, all their power, raising the sound, or in the beer, telling a tale. Gaily they ring while people sing songs of good cheer. Christmas is here. Ding dong, 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 ding dong. And all without end, their joyful tone to every home. Hark, how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away.
Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, meek and the bold. Ding dong, ding dong, that is their song, with joyful ring, all caroling. One seems to hear words of good cheer from everywhere, filling the air.
Oh, how they found, raising the sound o'er hill and dale, telling the tale.
Gaily they ring while people sing songs of good cheer. Christmas is here, very merry, merry, merry Christmas. Merry, 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 merry Christmas. On they send, on without end, their joyful tone to every home. Hark, how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away.
Hello. Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.